Yeah, it's the Rodan Show right here on 720 WGN. Thank you. Dean Richards filled in for me on Friday. Thank you for that. It was down in Guatemala, of all places. I'm not normally known to be traveling in Guatemala, but this was a friend of ours got married, and so I decided to go down and be part of the blessed event. And I'm 100% sure he wanted me at the blessed event by the time it was all said and done. Because my traveling party, which included Pat Brady, the former head of the Republican Party in Illinois, who's fallen very far away from that tree. That apple's rolled away. So he lives a totally different kind of, you imagine like a Republican being like an all, buttoned up kind of guy. And Pat, when he decides to let his hair down, still has the Republican congressman haircut. There's like a very specific kind of a look. When Republican congressmen have hair, they have a very angular kind of haircut. He still has that. And we were walking around Guatemala, and I just kept saying to him, "Senator, I hope nothing bad happens to you," because I was just figuring if anybody was going to get kidnapped, I just didn't want to be the guy. So I figured they would probably want a U.S. senator. So that's the way that we handled it. But it's a beautiful country. I mean, it's lovely. The people are very, very nice. But, like everything in Central America, there's the economy is not so great, although better now than it has ever been. And there's real industry. There were cranes up in the air as they're building in Guatemala City. But Guatemala City, as it turns out, sits on a fault line. So I don't know what the insurance rules are. My sense is from traveling there for a couple of days that throughout the country for a couple of days, there are no rules. And, when you talk about, we want deregulation, that's what you should go there and see how happy you'd be with complete deregulation, because there are no rules, none. So I heard Anna talking earlier about the All-Star game. And I wanted to point out that we were at a bar on Saturday night. I know, shocker. And the game was all that was on anywhere in the town was the slam dunk contest at the All-Star game. It is the NBA. We stop and we think about how big the NBA is here. We're like, well, it's a sport and not football, and it's not as popular as baseball, but it's definitely a solid number three in terms of popularity here in the United States. But overseas, which totally explains to me why it was that they got the NBA got so nuts about the China deal, right? About players criticizing China or coaches criticizing China. Because it's like, there are more international fans of the NBA than there are American fans of the NBA. There are more Chinese fans of the NBA than there are American fans of the NBA. And they all knew who all the players were. Hell, I didn't even know who the players were. I'm looking up there and I'm going, why is Common why is Chance holding a ball over his head? And why is Common sitting there? That's the only thing I could figure out. But then, again, Mr. Brady, because he likes to be the center of attention. He turns to everybody in the bar and goes, "We are from Chicago." And all I could think was, don't shoot. It's really quite a moment.
I was taking a shuttle over there from a nearby hotel. They were shuttling media over there. And on the bus, I heard like three or four different languages being spoken. To your point, like it was insane the amount of media there that was from out of the U.S.
Oh, no, it's huge. It's absolutely huge. It was amazingly, I just couldn't believe it. And I'm thinking, well, Guatemala, really? But yeah, it was in Central America, it's huge. South America, it's huge. There are players from South America. You're not going to get a lot of players from Central America. I mean, it's, you're not going to get a lot of players. I guess that's the only thing I want to say there. I don't think I think it's a good television sport for them more than it is anything else. But it is. Thank you. That was the sensors just kicking in to say you probably, or that was my brain saying you shouldn't have thought of that in the first place. All right, coming up on the program, let me just explain this. Coming up on the program, Aaron Katursky is going to join us. Ben Bradley first is going to join us to talk about this dead horse in Englewood, and we'll try to figure that out. Aaron Katursky is going to be here to talk about the Harvey Weinstein jury. Now we'll have the case. Deliberations start tomorrow. We'll just get you caught up on what happened there, because you may not have been following it, and there were some wild things that happened in that case, including the jury having to look at pictures of Harvey's junk to see if the witnesses were accurate. And we'll somehow try to explain what the problem is. And we'll try to, it's delicate what we have to explain here. But we'll do that. It's coming your way after the news at the bottom of the hour, if you want to stay tuned for that. Or you want to hide the kids. I think those are two ways to get distract them. Give them your iPad or iPhone or something. Let them go play with it while you're listening to the radio. All right, let's now check in with Lauren Lapka. She's got the WGN traffic and weather.
Two Chicago mothers cut down before their time. The lingering impact when women are victims of gun violence and the wounds that may never heal. Tonight on WGN TV, news at 9.
Oh, too soon. Too soon, Ben Bradley.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Have you no shame?
I know. Well, it wasn't me. I didn't press the button. let me just set that up. They found a dead horse in Englewood. Now, why did they find a dead horse in Englewood? Do we know?
Well, there was a guy who apparently kept two horses near 61st and Morgan on the city's south side. He kind of had an outdoor pen next to his home. And some people called Animal Care and Control on Saturday concerned because one of the horses appeared to be dead. Animal Care and Control and police showed up, and in fact, the horse was dead. And then Alderman Ray Lopez tweeted a photo and claimed that there was a wild dog eating the dead horse.
What do you mean a wild dog?
Like a stray dog.
Stray dog, okay.
And that set off all sorts of questions and concerns. Yeah. And now Ray Lopez and another alderman from the area say that the city really needs to rethink its ordinances regarding livestock. Interestingly,
don't we have them? I mean, this is the problem. I mean, okay, I just want to go back to the beginning of your recitation of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Residents knew that there were horses in a pen. Right? That was visible from the street.
Yeah.
Because in that part of the city, there are a number of empty lots or side lots and things like that. So,
not a secret that this guy kept him. And in fact, our Judy Wang talked with him this morning. He insisted that the horse died of natural causes. And in fact, that second horse that was there, Animal Care and Control, said there was no evidence that the second horse was malnourished. This guy said, basically he's being smeared and should be allowed to keep his animals. The alderman, though, talking about new restrictions, perhaps on the number of four-legged farm animals that you can keep in the city of Chicago.
Okay.
Did you know you got to get a permit?
Well, I know. We talked to these guys that were raising. There's a guy on the Oak Park, Chicago border. So he's actually, I think, on the city side there. That was raising there was the raising of chickens.
Mm-hmm.
There was the raising. That's a two-legged farm animal, but I think right.
I always like when Ro tests the extent of his expertise on anything that occurs in a rural
and
setting.
And goats. And the guy had goats. He also had goats.
That would be your four-legged.
Yeah, now that's
creature.
Four. So that guy. So the guy's got goats. He's got chicken. But he's doing that because he's got like a goat yoga deal where people come over and they lie down and the goats walk over him and he charges extra for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, think of all the people. It's kind of become a craze in the last couple of years. Chickens and roosters are coming back to the urban setting. One of the aldermen down there, Alderman Coleman, now suggesting that there should be limits on the number of cockadoodle doing that's done in your home.
The aldermen should put a limit on their own cockadoodle doing, if you know what I mean. Here's what I would like to know, though, is that a horse, that's a very specific animal. If a horse gets loose, if a chicken gets loose, it's going to do limited damage. I mean, it's going to do no more damage than a bird would normally do. Maybe a little pecking. I don't know. like,
but horses have gotten loose. Keep in mind, you know, there's the up on the north side in Old Town is one of the stables, you know, right in the heart of a busy area.
It was one of the stables
where they used to house the horses that were used for the carriage rides. Mm-hmm. And every now and then, I can remember covering stories where one of those horses would get loose. And you always had, you know, the great Chicago copper, you know, chasing down the horse with his six shooter, you know, ready to go just in case things took a turn.
Out of fear for the safety of myself and others.
Discharged his weapon. The shooting is justified.
It's a justified shooting, right?
Yes.
There is no, there's no comparison, though, because that's. That was a business that was in the business of horsing, and they had to have, of raising the horses, stabling the horses, and they had to have a license. I mean, can I just keep a horse in my garage if I want one?
You get $25 for the license.
Is that true?
That's true. That's what it costs, $25.
And you could just, no one's got to clear that?
Put a horse
in your house?
Well, a horse is just a horse, of course.
Oh, come on now. I'll do the comment.
Think of the Chicago Agriculture High School on the far south side. Yeah. I mean, they've got, you know, that's a great program down there.
Yes.
Look, as long as they're maintained well and not bothering anybody.
That looks like a farm down there. I mean, there's a lot of open land out there.
Yep.
I mean, Englewood, it's 64, what did you say, 61st and what?
61st and Morgan.
And Morgan. I mean, you're not too far from the expressway. I just want you to think about that for a second.
Instead of a carjacking, you got a horse.
Yeah, in the Wild West, you know, you could get shot for that.
Caller to 911 reports their horse was stolen, corner of 61st and Morgan.
Hey, I had two carjackings in my neighborhood over the weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like in front of my Starbucks. Two carjackings.
You should switch to a horse.
I should maybe I should go to Pete's Coffee now. I don't know, but whatever it is, it's like a. But it's. I mean, so we're talking about the reality of urban living. I just bring that up as that's kind of one of the bigger. That's a bigger problem than having horses, and I get that it's a perspective issue, but I just do not understand how that wasn't like a thing. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
How's a guy just got a couple of horses sitting in a lot and everybody walks back and goes, oh, yeah, that's Jonesy. Joe. He's got horses.
Yeah. Well, there are some eclectic people living in the city of Chicago, including in your neighborhood, Ro.
Yeah.
And one could argue we have more pressing problems in the city, namely the carjackings.
Yes.
You know, we had 11 children and teens among 26 that were shot in the city over the weekend. Not a great, you know, it was such a tale of two cities weekend, wasn't it? You had the all-star game in town and mm-hmm. all the glitz and glamour and prestige that goes with that. And meanwhile, you have just shootings, you know, alerts on your phone and all the emails that I was getting, internal newsroom emails about what was going on. It really does tell you that there are two cities in what you're seeing, though, with carjackings and with the smash and grabs and the other things is sometimes that there are no limits on where sometimes criminals will go to commit their crimes.
Oh, right. Absolutely. I mean, this is it really is. Actually, my neighborhood somehow is just it's a little on fire right now. Because there have been. Just this weekend, as I pointed out, there were two carjackings, one on Saturday night, one on Sunday night. And there the weekend before, there was a stabbing, a shooting, and a carjacking.
Mm-hmm.
And all basically in the same, like, four-square-block area.
Mm-hmm. And there are folks who will say, well, why should it matter more when it happens in Rose neighborhood than when it happens every day?
It shouldn't.
In some other neighborhoods.
But I'm here to tell you what's happening in my neighborhood. I'm raising the alarm that it is happening. And I wish everybody would raise the alarm that's happening.
It's happening on the CTA. It's happening downtown.
Yeah, we had a shooting there
in the tunnel connecting the blue line and the red line, essentially underneath, you know, next
Jackson
door to the Dirksen Federal Building.
Right.
These are areas that have traditionally been safer that... the Chicago police have not been able to, even with stepped up efforts, stop some of this crime. You know, out in the suburbs, though, we've had such a rash of stolen cars. I was reading an update from Hinsdale Police and I think Lyle Police. You know, they were suburban police involved in a car chase of three stolen cars at one time last week, where a guy jumped from one car, one stolen car, to another stolen car during the pursuit. A couple of days later, yesterday in Lyle, the stolen car from the Hinsdale pursuit ends up being involved in another crime and crashes in Lyle. So five people, I believe, were taken into custody in that. So I think, you know, crime is not what it was in the 1990s in Chicago, but because of social media,
because of
all the neighborhood sites, and that, I think we're a lot more aware of it, right? You know, 20 years ago, we knew when it happened on our block or to someone we knew. Now, you know, we're getting a patch alert or a block club Chicago alert, et cetera. It's just a lot easier.
I got a guy named Phil who just texts me every time anything happens. He's on a Chicago scanner. Anything happens within a block of my house or 10 blocks of my house, he's texting me about it.
Yeah.
But that's the point I want to make here is it's not bad just because it happened to me and I didn't care about it before.
No, no.
We've been talking about this forever in all these neighborhoods. And the point I would like to make, though, that is important, is that if it happens, I pretty much am certain that if it happens in my neighborhood, people are going to cooperate with police.
Mm.
And I think that we could stop this in greater measure if citizens, I hate to sound like Batman here.
Good citizens.
Citizens, Commissioner Gordon.
You need to call Commissioner Gordon right away and report.
Right. I mean, but I think if citizens stood up and said, well, we got to stop this thing now. The other part of that equation is that if they get arrested, you don't want them popping right back into the neighborhood the next hour.
Right.
And so that's the thing. If you get citizens to cooperate with that, you have to protect those citizens to cooperate.
And those citizens have to feel like there's a consequence. Otherwise, they'll just say, well, what's the point? Why am I caring more than my government is caring?
Right.
Or my local prosecutors, or my local cops, or whatever the case may be.
I mean, and again, I'm not, you know, fancy pants complaining here. I know, like, we're, up in the Lakeview area near Wrigley Field.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of Cubs executives that live in the fancy pants houses up there,
mm-hmm.
and they hired private security for their own blocks.
Oh, the Southport corridor has private security guards to patrol the neighborhood that they pay for with neighborhood funds because they felt like response time wasn't great.
Right. I mean, and it can't be because you've got limited resources.
Yeah.
Which is why I asked for more police officers, too. The whole damn thing is just, it's so galling because the answers are right in front of us and nobody seems to want to address them. And I know that it's expensive. I get it. But we also know that there's a lot of crap that gets paid for in this town that is less important. It might be important to some people, but police are important to everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got to start prioritizing here in a different way. I'm sorry to get on my soapbox, but I'm telling you. And then we're coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk about this green flight from Illinois.
Green flight?
Green flight from Illinois. Mm. People with money.
Is that the vegetarians leaving?
People with money are leaving the state of Illinois. We'll talk about that in the 4 o'clock hour. And there's always been these stories about it, and you always mm-hmm. think it's just, you know, people talking. It really is happening. There's now statistics on it.
Okay,
so there you go. And these are taxpayers. They pay more taxes per person than the average Illinois taxpayer.
These are the Bruce Waynes of Chicago.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Goodbye. Now, Ben Bradley. Enjoy yourself on the WGN TV News at 4, 5, 6, 9, 10. Here comes the WGN Radio News. Jen DeSalvo. It's the Rokon Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, we're joined by Aaron Katursky, ABC News. We're going to talk about the Harvey Weinstein trial, which the arguments have ended in the Harvey Weinstein trial, and the final statements and everything have been made. But the final arguments, the jury now has it. They'll start deliberations tomorrow. And I think in the main, there's been so many other things, Aaron, going on. I don't know if you're familiar with them in the ABC newsroom in New York, but there are some other things going on. A lot of people haven't been paying attention to this, but there's some really wild developments in this throughout the last, what has been about 4 weeks of this trial, 3.5 weeks of this trial.
Yeah, it's been 3 weeks of witness testimony, 35 different witnesses, most of them prosecution witnesses, including 6 women who have formally made accusations. 2 of them comprise the criminal charges, and the others are sort of supporting players. Mm-hmm. There was no one, save for the guy who was paid, that testified willingly for the defense. They had to subpoena a number of witnesses to testify on behalf of Harvey Weinstein. And there are, I think, a couple of interesting questions for the jury. At base is, do you believe the women? But the second complicating question is whether what happened actually a rape, particularly in the case of Jessica Mann, who ended up accusing Weinstein of raping her in 2013. She also carried on a consensual relationship with Weinstein both before and after the alleged attack. She's a complicated figure who gave complicated testimony, and the jury's going to have to sort out whether they think what happened was rape or something consensual, as Weinstein says.
But that was one of the two witnesses that is alleging a crime, though.
That's right. Mimi Haley, who was a production assistant for the Weinstein television arm on Project Runway, I think, was she has alleged a sexual assault. And Annabella Shora, who was the Sopranos actress, she has alleged an attack. And while her account is too old to be prosecuted, she is the witness that forms the basis for the predatory sexual assault charge that Weinstein faces. That basically means he's a repeat offender.
Got it. And there was something very disquieting for the jury because they had to look at pictures of his junk. Is that correct, Aaron Katursky, ABC News?
Well, and because Harvey Weinstein, according to the testimony, had assistants inject him directly in said junk. This is a weird conversation we're having here, Ro.
Well, not the weirdest, though, ever.
With an erectile dysfunction medication. He couldn't take whatever he needed orally, so it was injected, and he made his assistants do it. And this is part of some of the testimony that Jessica Mann gave, where she almost felt sorry for him. And this is a woman who clearly had issues with her own father. She said that she wanted to have a consensual relationship after the attack so that she didn't fall victim again. You know, there are really different views about female empowerment during the course of the trial.
This is what you were describing as complicated here in terms of her charge.
Her charge, exactly, because of the nature of their relationship. An attack on one hand, consensual on other occasions. And not that, you know, the prosecutors had already anticipated this, and they had primed the jury to understand that one attack is enough, that it doesn't matter what else went on. And they also provided expert testimony about how rape victims will often respond, that it isn't necessarily just a cut and dry thing. So the jury got an education for sure.
Well, there was some testimony along the way here, too, that he had some of the women were claiming that his junk was so unusual, and some speculated that he might have been like a hermaphrodite type, like you intersex or whatever the terminology is.
Yeah.
They may have had both male and female parts essentially, and did that come up in the trial?
Oh, it did. Again, Jessica Mann, the rape accuser, talked about that's one of the reasons why she ended up feeling sorry for Harvey Weinstein, that he was injecting himself with this, you know, with erectile dysfunction medication, but then also appeared to her like he might kind of have assorted parts. I mean, it's complicated testimony because it isn't necessarily corroborated, but she had, you know, but there were photos there are apparently a number of photos that were not introduced, but there were about half dozen or seven photos that the jury had to look at.
Okay, that's enough for us. Well, it goes to the jury tomorrow. We'll see how long they take to deliberate. Aaron Katursky, ABC News. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
I'm really glad we had this conversation.
Yeah,
bro.
Let's
Thanks.
Forget we ever had it. Thank you. Let's check in now with Lauren Lapka, who's got the WGN traffic and weather. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right. As I mentioned earlier, I was out of the nation. Well, it's kind of out anyway because we did it in the news of the bombing arrows at Adam Kinzinger's wedding in Guatemala, where it was absolutely one of the most beautiful weddings I have ever attended. It was lovely. It was in this, you know, really unique setting, and it was great to go to, and I had to get in there on Saturday, get out of there on Sunday, but it was, or Friday and then Sunday. But it was a crazy, crazy, crazy set of travel that surrounded it, because in the coronavirus hysteria, I could not believe what I was seeing at the airports. If anybody has flown in the last couple of weeks, they have undoubtedly noticed this, that about a third of the people in the concourses have masks on. And I was sitting next to a guy on the plane. I can't put this up on social media because I don't know who he is, and I didn't get a chance because he didn't speak. But he was wearing a mask the entire flight, 3 hours from Dallas down to Guatemala City. And I'm sitting next to the guy, and all I could think about is he sick, or is he afraid I'm going to get him sick, or the plane's going to get him sick. And then I just heard Jen DeSalvo in the news, in for Kim Gordon, talk about the fact that the real issue here is not the coronavirus. Everybody's freaked out about the coronavirus. The real issue is the flu. But I've flown in a lot of flu seasons. You know, anytime you've ever gone anywhere, we got on an airplane anytime between November and May, you have flown in flu season. You have not, and I could guarantee you that you have, with the possible exception of the SARS outbreak from over a decade ago, you would not see this number of people who are taking these level of precautions with the masks, and there was people wearing rubber gloves. And I'm like, where do they even get the masks? And it wasn't like Asian travelers. It didn't appear to me to be. I don't want to, stereotype, but I suppose I am. Ironically, in mono on the AM band. I believe that these were at least Western Hemisphere people that were all doing this. And Jen DeSalvo in her news has pointed out that 22 million people have already gotten influenza, the flu, and that's very bad. And that's in the United States, 22 million people. And we're talking about tens of thousands, actually hundreds of thousands now, in China of people. And China is 6 times bigger than the United States by population. Right? So let's just stop and think about that for a second. Well, not quite 6 times, but call it five times. It's crazy. And we're all worried about the coronavirus and the flu. The flu has already, between 22 and 31 million people. 210,000 people have been hospitalized, and 12,000 people in the U.S. have died from the flu. And we're freaked out about the coronavirus.
Well, here's the thing about the regular influenza. We have a vaccination for that, and we're able to prevent it. We're able to stop it. Coronavirus, that's all brand new to us. We haven't done anything to study that or stop that.
Well, and there's people who won't go in for the flu vaccine.
Yeah. Yep.
And the flu vaccine, but here's the thing. Even the flu vaccine, and I'm a big proponent of it, is not perfect. But what it does do is it gives you a level of protection against the two major strains of the flu, the A strain and the B strain. And if you do take the shot, if you get the shot every year, and you actually do end up getting the flu, because it doesn't exactly match the strain that is in the environment at the time, the coverage from the vaccine doesn't match, it's still going to give you a base level of protection, because your body is going to recognize, even though it won't, the white cells, the T cells won't totally match that flu to kill it instantly, that virus to kill it instantly, it's going to battle it and win the battle faster because it's got half the match. That's a sort of a, scientists are probably driving themselves nuts trying to be very specific with me. I know that Lauren right now is about to disagree with me completely about that, but it's basically close enough. It's going to aid. You have enough sort of base of the antibodies that are going to help you get over it faster. Again, the flu, really dangerous, really dangerous. And again, we're very nuts about the coronavirus. And this is the guy sitting next to me is young. For a while, I was with some other friends on the flight, and they were like, that guy's the air marshal. And I go, well, he's wearing a mask. I suppose maybe that's a good cover if he's the air marshal. But then he had a drink during the flight, so he wasn't the air marshal, unless he was faking the drink. And then they sat him next to me because they thought I was going to be the problem. I don't know. But he was a young guy in good shape.
Well, maybe he has an immune disorder, you know, something.
He didn't appear to have it.
Well, how would you know?
I don't know, but he just didn't appear to have it.
I'm just saying, sometimes there are things that are going on internally for people that look healthy on the outside that may give reason for their behavior.
Well, could be. But then at some point, he took the mask, like for the eating, he took the mask off and it was off for a while. And then all of a sudden he realized the mask was off and he put it back on. I think this is a one-time deal. And it was one of those, I guess you could buy them at Walgreens, right? These surgical masks.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they should stop selling them at the Walgreens. I think it's, you know, it's a
Well, a lot of a them hazard. Aren't even going to do anything.
Right. They're not the right level. And some of them are not the right level for this particular virus. And the virus is a touch virus anyway. You're picking it up and putting your, you know, it can live on a surface. The air-to-air transmission of the virus is less likely than surface to digit to, you know, like to your hands than touching your face or, you know, eyes, nose, mouth, whatever it is.
Sometimes I feel like I'm going to get sick just going to the medicine aisle at the store because, like, people who are here were sick.
It's true. That's true. Before I went to Walgreens last week on Thursday, and all I was thinking about is, you know, on the little pad where you type in your frequent flyer number or whatever that is, okay, I'm a 312, right? So I'm thinking the 3, the 1, and the 2 completely. You know, you don't want to touch those.
Well, you're also just standing in the same line as all the sick people breathing the
right.
same air.
I know. I should have just been wearing, like, the Ad Astra outfit, you know, like the whole like, the space suit. And again, the point is when you're on the airplane, unless you're wearing the spacesuit, it's really not going to help you. You have to wipe off all the surfaces around you and all the things everybody says you've got to do. But I'm just telling you, my point of this conversation is to say that we are all reacting now. Well, a great number of us are reacting to the story of the coronavirus. When in reality, the far more dangerous situation in America is the flu, by far. Now, eventually, if the coronavirus becomes an international pandemic, well, that's a separate issue. But it appears not to be tracking that way. And the death rate of the coronavirus isn't that much higher at this point than the death rate from the flu. It's bad. It's new. Yes. And to Jen's point, there isn't actually a vaccine for it. But there may eventually be one for this particular brand of it. And the other thing I think we learned from this is, you know, don't live with a bunch of chickens or bats or anything like that, you know, because it's a trans-special thing. It's not good for you. Or a horse in your backyard, for that matter, if you must really know the truth. All right. Coming up on the program, I got Blackhawks tickets in the 4 o'clock hour for you. They're taking on the Anaheim Ducks on Tuesday, March 3rd, and we got the tickets courtesy of, as we do every Monday, Four Seasons. Air conditioning, plumbing, heating, for all the right reasons. Four Seasons, find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of Chicago Blackhawks tickets from Four Seasons. That comes your way. And also in the 4 o'clock hour, we're going to be talking about a couple different interesting things, including, you know, you hear these stories that a bunch of people are leaving Illinois because they don't want to pay the taxes and deal with all the other problems. Well, the statistics are bearing that out. More after this.
A new study says more people than ever, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, mistrust the news they get on social media. So what are we supposed to do? The answer after the 7:30 news.
Bob Surratt.
Talk to you in the morning.
WGN.
It's the Rokan Show on 720 WGN. All right, it's President's Day. So we're going to talk about something that affects all of us that only could have been created by the framers of the Constitution. And that's, how do people actually vote? I'm not going to make this boring or political. I just want to explain something that's happening in the state of Illinois that everybody in the state of Illinois should be aware of. That you have the new census coming out, there's going to be redistricting of the congressional seats and of all the seats, essentially, in the state of Illinois. And what does that actually mean? And they're trying to change the process of how they do it because it's been rigged for years and years and years and years. Because you know who draws the map in Illinois? A guy named Mike Madigan. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's Speaker of the House of down in Springfield, and he and some of the other folks get together and they draw a map and they decide who's going to live and who's going to die in these different districts, and they gerrymander the districts. They have been able to do it successfully so far, to gerrymander the districts to benefit their friends and disadvantage their enemies. And right now there is a push for changing that. And Ryan Talley's with us. He is the policy director of Change Illinois. And what change would you like? First of all, I got that about right, right?
Yep. That's absolutely right.
That's exactly how this has gone. What are you guys trying to do to change that?
Sure. So our organization is pushing for amendment to the state constitution that will allow citizens to be on the commission that redraw the legislative and congressional maps here in Illinois. So right now, the General Assembly every 10 years redraws those maps. This would take that power away from them and put it in the hands of people to determine their representation.
Is anybody else doing it that way?
Yeah, we have four states nationally that do that: California, Colorado, Arizona, and Michigan's the most recent. So they've went California and Arizona have went through this process before. We've seen it work, and we think that's something that Illinois voters should have the opportunity to do as well.
A lot of people will say, "Well, what's wrong with just geographically doing it?"
Sure. Well, a big piece of our amendment is 30 public hearings across the state, and where that piece is key is that people, as well as being on the commission, we need to have these hearings so that people have the opportunity to participate and say how their district should be shaped. And that's something sorely lacking in the process now.
But who would be have the to say it like this, but it's true, the sophistication to understand that? That would be political operatives in the first place, right? When they get stacked onto these things?
Well, no, actually. So what we saw in California were people that were engineers, consultants, professors that were on their commission. So you don't really.
The people were very politically active, though, I would imagine.
The few that I've talked to didn't have extensive political background where they were, you know, involved in political action committees or on campaigns prior. You know, one of the things they can do is hire resources to help with some of the technical pieces, but their job is really to make sure that this is a fair, transparent process, and we want people that really care about that piece of it serving on the commission.
I was in with a bunch of politicians over the weekend, and I'm still looking for my wallet. There is a thought that Illinois on this new map is going to, on the congressional level, is going to need at least one, maybe two, Hispanic districts, mm-hmm. right? And so the way that it's been broken up here is you got districts that will be primarily Republican, and those are downstate, and a couple in the Chicago area that are going to be, you know, on the sort of the collar of Chicago area. And then for the Democratic districts, and again, that's the way they're looking at it, you're going to have black districts and Hispanic districts.
Yeah. And so we take that into account too. There's nine criteria that the commission work off of, and they're prioritized, and we start with the Federal Voting Rights Act. And so that would be the creation of majority-minority districts in the state, and then they would go on to other criteria such as compactness and having the districts contiguous.
Right. Right, they have to right, which is weird. I mean, look at look at the congressional districts. You want to see something wacky,
yeah.
And you can see there are districts that go all the way from the north central Illinois, and then cut over to 39. That's the spine of the state, that highway, the spine of the state, and take it all the way up to Rockford, and then go over. Right,
sure.
There's some crazy, crazy, crazy things here. All right, if people want to get involved in this, how do they do it?
Yeah, please go to our website, changeil.org. What we need right now are people getting active and involved in this fight. We're having a rally day March 26th at the state capitol. And then we have tools online that you can use to find your lawmakers, contact them, tell them to support this amendment. It is in the Senate Joint Resolution 18, and in the House Joint Resolution 41.
All right. Thank you very much. Ryan Talley, thank you. Appreciate it. From Change Illinois, we've got the traffic and the weather right now with Lauren Lapkin. All right. Joining us right now in the studio, Mark Glennon, and he is he's an expert on this. I've been teasing this all day, Mark, because I've been hearing people say to me from basically for the last number of years, I mean, at least 5 years, talk about trying to get out of the state of Illinois. People who have, especially people who have a lot of assets, people who, you know, have done well, built their businesses here, made some money, and then they decide that based on the taxes and based on the weather and based on a lot of other factors, and political corruption, I think, is another one that people always point to. I don't know if they really mean it when they say it, but they're trying to come up with a whole set of reasons to tell their friends and family why it is that they're all going to Franklin, Tennessee. But they are, and we've been hearing about this, and I think there are a lot of people who've been in the political class and others along the way have been going, no, that's just anecdotal evidence. It doesn't really happen. It's apocryphal. But it turns out that it is actually happening because there's real statistics behind it.
There sure are. It comes from the IRS. They
Oh, God.
They break it down by income, and they do interstate migration data every year. They missed it for a year. That's part of the reason why some of this was sloughed off as you said, anecdotal evidence. But the anecdotal evidence has been palpable, from my experience.
Oh, yeah, everybody's talking about it, that they're doing
it. But the IRS.
I hate to sound like, that's very popular now, say, well, everybody says. But in this case, you do hear it a lot. So you do wonder, are people really voting with their feet here in terms of getting out of Illinois? What are the numbers showing?
They are. And the predominant group of people leaving does tend to be lower income. However, the IRS data show that all income groups are leaving, and those wealthier people that are leaving as well take a vastly disproportionate amount of income with them. So, for example, just the
tax burden,
that's right, $200,000 and above, that comprised only 11% of the people that left the state, but they took 55% of the income with them. And, that's taxable income that's lost. It's not just taxable income we lose, of course, but they were paying property taxes. They were doing philanthropic giving, spending, all the rest. So all that leaves with them.
So they took with them 5.6 of everybody, 88,000 tax filers here.
That's right. That's the total
in 2018.
In 2018.
All right. So that's the last year available.
Right.
Right. So 2019, I can imagine, not going to be much better, if not a lot worse. They took with them $5.6 billion in annual adjusted gross income. And so it's a lot of money, right? That's a lot of money that comes out of the Illinois economy.
And it's actually nothing new. This was not a quirky year. It's been going on for at least 5 years. And when you add up all that from all those years, it comes to $400 billion. I mean, we're talking serious money, and that's all getting drained out of state.
And we have a sense of why, what the reasons really are. Again, they're anecdotal from my perspective, but can we glean anything from these IRS numbers?
Yeah, I mean, clearly part of it is taxes, but you got to look at taxes as part of a package. They think the money's going down the drain. It's not being wisely spent. They see no end to this. As Warren Buffett said, don't go invest in Illinois because they're coming for your money. He was looking forward to even further tax increases because of all our unfunded pension liabilities. And particularly business owners and such know that. They see that it's going to get still worse. And that's what's scaring them. And you combine that with corruption, the other problems in Illinois government, and they say, why should we stick around here? This is a bad bet.
It does seem, though, that the FBI has been very busy of late, and that we're going through some of the biggest names in Chicago and state politics seem like they are on the line here. I mean, one of the biggest names in Chicago politics for the last 50 years, clearly is going to be facing a trial or going to be facing.
Ed Burke, yes.
Yeah, Ed Burke is going to be. And you're seeing a lot of people who surround Mike Madigan who are starting to fall here in local municipal politics and state politics. So, you start to wonder if, eventually that, which happens generationally in Illinois, that the top gets sheared off of the corruption pie. But the question is, who's going to replace it? And will anybody really start to do the right thing here? Is your sense that when people are voting with their feet here to get out of Illinois, that, and as you mentioned, it comes from all different strata here. It's not just, wealthy people.
Right.
As a matter of fact, that's only 11%, as you point out, people over with an income over $200,000. Is crime a big issue?
I think that's part of it. I don't hear that mentioned that much, but, certainly here in Chicago, you do see, again, anecdotally, a lot of complaints about it appearing in what used to be safer neighborhoods, even right here on Michigan Avenue,
right.
Those kinds of crimes in Old Town. That's part of it. We have made progress. I think you're right. There's going to be a lot of indictments. There's going to be a lot of cleanup. Lori Lightfoot, God bless her. I think whatever else you think about her, I think she is honest. She's a real reformer. She beat the machine.
Handily. Three to one.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I think if that's it, just to center on Chicago for a second, the city of Chicago, if there's anything that is, and she's a tough cookie, but if there's anything that is a moment where the voters are smarter than the politicians think they are, it was that city election last year. When Lori Lightfoot took on, who was expected, Tony Preckwinkle, who was just basically was already measuring the drapes at City Hall to move across the hall to become the mayor of the city as opposed to the Cook County Commissioner, or the Cook County Board President, nobody knows what the hell that person does, right? You get to ask.
That's right.
And nobody knows who their Cook County Commissioner is. And there's far fewer Cook County Commissioners than there are aldermen. Right. So it's like that's a great place to go hide and steal stuff if you really want to do it.
And you're touching on a real important point here. It's all these overlapping units of government that we have here in Chicago, especially. That is where the financial problem is concentrated worse. When you add up all these debts and unfunded liabilities, it comes out to $144,000 per household if you're in Chicago. And think about that. Most people can't contribute anything to that. You can't ask them. You shouldn't ask them to pay for it. So, you know, if you want to tax the top 10%, or maybe the people over 200,000. If you did it only for people over 200,000.
It appears only shad are impacted, not other wildlife. The kill is near Miller Westerman's Marina.
we're being interrupted here. All right, we're no longer being interrupted. Okay, go ahead. We're talking to Mark Glennon, founder of wirepoints.org. All right, go ahead. So you were saying that it's overlapping government and the amount of money that is being lost here. So it's 140,000 per household in terms of basically what we owe. Right. In terms of, we want to clear up the amount that we're underwater
in Chicago. Right.
Yeah. And we talk about property taxes, and the property taxes alone are also creating this flight without question. And that affects everybody. You know, we were talking about, you know, are people leaving Illinois? Why are they leaving Illinois? The property tax situation up here in the Chicago metropolitan area, whether it's in Cook County, even in the collar counties here, the property taxes are going up. And it's freaking people out.
It really is. That is where it's burning hottest, and that's the hot button issue that we hear about all the time. And it's well over 3% on a real basis in many of the suburbs, and that's a death spiral. You just don't get any improvements. You get people leaving. That shrinks the tax base further. Taxes go up on the people that are left behind. It's a death spiral. And, you know, we hear sad stories from little old ladies on fixed income. They get their tax bill. They're nearly in tears. They just simply can't pay it. That's probably the biggest, scariest factor is property taxes, especially around Chicagoland.
All right. Do you see an answer here? Stemming the tide of people leaving the state of Illinois?
Our view, it's going to have the remedy has to match the malady, which means a vast and drastic set of reforms, including a constitutional amendment, for example, that we would need to do real pension reform. And we're not going to solve this on the backs of pensioners by any means.
Pension reform for whom, though?
That's exactly the issue. You'd have to protect the folks with smaller pensions, and the lowest hanging fruit, I think, is the 3% automatic COLA, which even most folks who
cost of living.
That's right. It's really not a cost of living adjustment. It's an automatic 3% raise. That accounts for a big chunk of the problem. Maybe you make the retirement ages a little higher. Maybe you cap out those big fat cat pensions that we've talked about.
Are you talking about government pensions solely, or are you talking about all pensions?
Only government pensions.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. And the government pensions, and there has been some reform. I mean, you know, these guys used to double and triple dip in a way, but then Illinois changed the law so that once, you know, depending on the pensions that you're getting, you know, whether it's state, federal, or municipal, or state, county, or municipal, then they all get lumped into one now, as opposed to you're getting three separate.
Well, you know, they cut back that we had that reform, and the teachers union lobbied to reverse that reform successfully. And so they took that away, and it's kind of open season.
For the teachers or for the...
The teachers union actively lobbied for that.
But just for teachers, though.
Yes, but that's, you know, 60% of the state's pension problem is the teachers' pension. TRS is by far the big one in the state's problems.
Isn't that, but how does what, and that's, and you hear that a lot. And, you know, you hear that about, you know, policemen, firemen, and politicians for sure. Everybody wants to take away the pensions for the politicians and the people in the bureaucrats, right? But for the people who are actually on the front lines, and teachers are on the front lines, you know, what do you do about it? How do you induce people to go into these jobs? Because a lot of people are induced into public service because they know that there is a pension and that that does help them. And then after X amount of years of doing that, they can go off and do other things or not work at all.
Yeah, my view is that the salary scales are messed up. That is, the younger teachers, who arguably are the better teachers, get very poor pay. Most of them, when they join, they don't even focus on their pension. And it's, they have no idea how expensive it is for the government to honor that, especially when they've been as underfunded as they have been. So give them the compensation up front, attract the good ones up front fairly with fair salaries, and give them a retirement plan comparable to what the private sector gets.
All right. Mark Lennon is with wirepoints.org. And it's an independent nonprofit research and commentary organization looking at these things. Like, and we started this conversation on green flight, as it's known, from Illinois. Yeah. But people deciding that they want to get out of the state, moving from migration from state to state. And as you mentioned, this is new information from the IRS. Do we know what states benefited the most from Illinois migration?
Texas, Wisconsin, Indiana, and Florida picked up most of our people and income.
Wow. You know what? Tennessee doesn't make it. And everybody claims to me that they're moving to Franklin, Tennessee. And I keep thinking, Franklin, Tennessee is going to be a town of 3 million people before this is all said and done, if I just listen to everybody.
They were up there. Yeah, a lot of Cubs bars in Nashville.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I don't really get. Well, you know, like Phoenix all of a sudden got taken over by Chicagoans, and now looks like it's going to be Tennessee. All right, well, thank you very much. We appreciate your time, Mark.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's check into the WGN Newsroom, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here is Jen DeSalvo. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, let me explain to you that we have Blackhawks tickets to give away. We're going to give them away before 5 o'clock. And they are very good Blackhawks tickets. And they're to a very good game because the Blackhawks have to win every game now. This is like playoff tension at the United Center. The Anaheim Ducks come into town next Tuesday, March, actually 2 weeks from next, it's March 3rd. The Hawks have not been here a lot in February, and it's starting to take a toll. Will be here Wednesday and Friday, though. Mm-hmm.
Just three home games in February.
Yeah. So, and two of them are this week. We'll be live at the one on Friday if you want to come by and say hello to us. And us there on a Friday, on a weekend night? Oh, my gosh. I don't even know how we're going to survive that, because we have a tendency to overenjoy ourselves when we're at the games after we do our program there.
Scheduling a ride right now.
Yes, you might want to do that. Mr. Uber, you're going to need to help us there. And it's really something, because Lauren then at the she like wants to run on the ice and tell everybody exactly what it was that they should be doing there. Where's Colleton?
Why didn't you take that shot?
It's really good. Really fun. So come join us. We may be out there on Wednesday night as well, but please come join us on Friday if you're out there, and come by the Goose Island Pub and come say hello and say, well, thanks for being here. We'll say thank you for them to be there. That's how we're going to do that. Courtesy of the tickets that we have coming up before 5 o'clock to the Hawks Ducks on Tuesday, March 3rd, a courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. And tune in again every Monday all season long to win a pair of tickets to Chicago Blackhawks games from our friends at Four Seasons. All right. Again, coming up a little bit later on. I belong to a gym. I know that's hard for you people to believe. But I do. I don't get there very often. But I got a letter from him today. And I'll share the letter. And no, it's not about my lack of attendance. New mobile phone guidelines at the gym. This is fascinating. Turns out that in the letter, they point out that they have, since 1980, strived to provide members with a unique social and physical atmosphere, relaxing, rejuvenating, all the things that they say about themselves. But cell phones have begun to have an effect, a negative effect on this atmosphere. In the last year, they have analyzed device usage at the club. Now, I wonder about this at the health club. I wonder exactly what it is. You know, did they put spies out there? Were there guys with cameras and their dumbbells? And they found that not only are people sitting down on the equipment and using their cell phone and, like, you know, going through their email or whatever, their, you know, Insta, whatever the thing happens to be, you know, they're taking up too much time doing that. They're too loud when they're talking on their phones, if they're using the equipment or they're, you know, at the little juice bar area or wherever, the, you know, the, in the locker rooms. You know, you cannot have your cell phone out in a locker room.
Well, yeah, I hope not.
Right? I mean, that's like a whole deal. That's, I know that's been a rule ever since cameras became part of the cell phone.
Although it seems that all the guys that love to do the whole leg up and proudly show it might not mind.
Well, those guys, right. The rest of us do mind. But there's, but also, I mean, in, you know, in like women's locker rooms and stuff, you don't want women out there with their, you know, their cameras doing stuff. You know, taking, and it's, and listen, I hear the women's locker room is not exactly what Kevin and I think it is. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's what you think it is.
Really?
I have no idea what you think it is.
Oh, no, they're thinking like, you know, something you'd see online on an inappropriate website.
Or even an inappropriate website. Even like, you know, Victoria's Secret did one of those things on TV.
The steamy air wafting through the locker room.
Exactly.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's not like that.
Just let us dream.
Nah.
Yeah.
Hey, anyway, dream all you want.
The point is that you can't take your, you can't take pictures there. Here is the most fascinating part of this letter from my health club about the use of cell phones. They don't want you going on social media from the health club.
Really?
I will explain why. You will be surprised by this, and we'll take your phone calls at 312-981-7200 on this subject after the traffic and the weather. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, I was just mentioning right before we took the short little time out that I received a letter from my gym. I know. Don't everybody be shocked. That said that they want to restrict new rules on the use of cell phones at the gym, right? And people, anybody who goes to a gym or a health club or whatever it is, they know, or anybody who's ever in a public space knows that there's a lot of stuff that goes on, you know, with cell phones that shouldn't be. People too loud on the phone. They don't realize that when they're on the phone, they shouldn't be screaming. That when they decide they want to start taking pictures of things, they're like, well, why, what are they taking a picture of? And you want to call Homeland Security. There's a lot of different things.
Every day online, there's a viral video of somebody doing something weird in the gym.
Yes.
And people continue to like creep on their fellow gym mates and post viral videos.
Okay, so we get to this point, which is one of the major points is that the use of your cell phone at this gym is now restricted as it pertains to social media. You may not post social media posts from this gym. And then there's a lot of idiots that are like, well, how are they going to catch me? Because you're on social media.
Plus, your gym's all about status. I don't want to mention the gym, so that's going to be tough, I think, for a lot of the members.
How
at
do
that
you know
particular...
what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what gym you're talking
know.
About. Yes, I do. People love to post pictures that their members there.
Oh, is he an EBC guy?
Like, what are you doing?
I wasn't ready. Now that's Jen.
No, but is it because of the location that they don't want people knowing where their members are at certain times, or is it because...
Well, there are high-profile members at this particular gym, so I could see that viewpoint. I could also just be really annoyed that people continue to... Like, every day, I would be so annoyed if I turned to my gym and saw another member filming me and then putting on Instagram for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Like, check out this guy doing that, or she's doing this.
Well, I think there's a couple of things at play here. One, the stated reason for this is you're on to something here. The stated reason is that when they do that, they are unintentionally outing other people who are at the gym. Now, there may be some people at the gym that call in sick to work. There may be some people at the gym canoodling with somebody who's not their intended canoodler. There may be, God knows what all the different reasons are for that issue.
But, I can imagine there's so many social influencers, though, that are there doing stuff.
Well, this is not just about that. This is about any gym. Don't make it just about this gym.
Yeah.
The point is that this is the problem with the cell phones and the social media, is that no matter what you're doing, where you are, how it's working, there's somebody out there who's going to put something up that could potentially create a problem. And this idea, as Kevin just mentioned, this idea that, you know, there's somebody working out or some stupid thing that happens at a gym or a fight that breaks out, and then people are putting it on social media. You know, once you're inside, if you're out on the street, you can do anything you want. But once you're inside a private business, and especially once you're inside a private business that's like a club where it's a required membership and all the rest of that to be a part of, whether, you know, you're going to, you know, one of those gyms that has purple treadmills or you're going to, you know, some fancy pants place. Doesn't matter. You cannot do that. Stop it.
You have a good point about going into private places and not posting. We had a friend who had a housewarming party, and they posted no social media signs all over their house.
I love it. You know who does a great job at policing this? Our private country club golf courses. Because golf courses will police this hard.
Yeah. And well, they've policed it hard ever since there were cell phones. There's a lot of clubs that won't let cell phones.
That's what I mean. But who else is really great at that?
Yeah.
You know? But I totally get it. It's a private club for certain people, and a lot of people obviously aren't going to, even if somebody was intending to film somebody else, just walking on by in the background. Right. Oh, there's so-and-so.
Well, there's right, exactly. What are they doing here?
What? I thought they were out of town.
Right. That's exactly the problem. And I think it also should be pointed out that there are, as we started this conversation, there are creepers out there that are taking pictures of particularly in shape or particularly out of shape people.
Exactly.
The average folks aren't really getting on the social media very much. But there may be, oh, look how hot she is, right? Or look at what a dumpy guy this is. Not that it ever happened to me. I'm just saying, if it were to happen. All right. That is, particularly, now this is interesting. People are also using the strength equipment and stretching mats to relax and go on social media. Do not use these stretching mats. Again, this is from the memo that I got from the gym today. Do not use these stretching mats as a lounging area or the stairwells. I'm like, who's using the stairwells?
Yeah, I might be married to the first part of that.
There's always a stretchy match guy or girl who's like laying down, but they have like the hamstring roller under one leg, and they're just rolling their leg for a half hour while they scroll through their phone.
Right.
Yep.
Exactly right.
I'll tell my husband, I'm like, more reps, less phone.
Oh, you'd be a player. Anyway, the point is that they don't want you guys. The most important thing, and I think this is the thing that's going to get everybody, is the idea that if you're on the social media, they're potentially going to take your membership away if you're posting social media stuff from the club, because it's a privacy issue. They also don't want people using the cell phone if they're sitting, like, you know, like at a bar, like a lunch bar, or a bar, or a juice bar, and it's a bar.
How am I supposed to Instagram my beautiful Bloody Mary?
Right. They don't want you using that. They don't want to do that. It's funny. I'll bet you that there's going to be an amendment to this where it only can you take pictures of the food, but then you have to send that while you're out of the gym. It's interesting, though. I think this goes to a bigger issue, which is how we now live our lives in the social media world, right? Everything is on social media. I mentioned I was at a wedding over the weekend, and there was a picture on social media one of the pictures of the bride and groom walking down the aisle. And then there was a guy at the wedding who, you know, may not have been at the wedding, according to, you know, some people around his life. And the next thing you know, he's there, because he's right there behind the bride and the groom. He got a few phone calls. It wasn't a cheaty situation. It was just more of a cough into the phone, and I'm not feeling so good.
Stomach doesn't feel great. Yeah. Must have been something I ate over the weekend.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. One of those deals. How about that? So that's where social media can really...
I'm all for it. The more strict, the better. I'm so tired of constantly being worried about someone filming me or doing something stupid. Everybody wants to put everything on social media. I'm like, no. Put the phone down. Can we just chill out for a second here? I've had a few cocktails.
And the other piece, too, is I swear to God, I cannot tell you how much in just in this year alone. What are we, 7 weeks into the year? Not even. It is imperative that everybody take a picture of everything they're eating. And it's getting worse because they're doing it because they want to be on the gram, but they're doing it like at Potbellies because they're trying to figure out, because they have apps now that are telling them what it is that they take a picture of what you're eating and it's telling you how much of it you can eat. We're becoming so dependent on this entire thing. It is ridiculous. Sorry.
So what's been the feedback like at your high-profile gyms, bro? Has there been backlash?
I just got it today. I don't know. I haven't been there in 2 years, so I'll let you know when I go there the next time.
For the most part, people might be cheering at this, you know, from the conversation that we've had here.
I'm going now. Now I can go. The only reason I wasn't going to the gym was because I was worried about the social media.
Document everybody's reaction to it with your phone.
Yeah. I'll go out there.
We're here for
coming out of the door. What did you think? What do you think?
You're like a reporter bombarding your fellow members.
This is for Instagram. What do you feel about the new social media policy at our gym? There are a lot of posers at my gym. Yes, that is true. There's a lot of people who are just there to, you know,
be on Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. And it is true to be influencers, but that's not the reason I belong. Been there a long time. All right, coming up on the top 5 of 5, Jim Baker. Remember him? The preacher claims to have the cure to the coronavirus. Still trying to figure out why God hasn't smote him yet. I worry a little bit about, I know God's got a lot of other things to worry about, but the smoting of Jim Baker is one of those things, you know, that you might want to, I'd like to talk to him about, or at least, you know, getting him out of the, maybe a power loss at his studios or something. I'll explain that coming up in the top 5 of 5. Right now, caller number 19, 312-981-7200 wins a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Anaheim Ducks on Tuesday, March 3rd, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. And tune in every Monday all season long for your chance to win tickets to see the Blackhawks take on whomever it happens to be. And again, this is the Hawks taking on the Ducks. Good luck. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200 rips us off. All right, there you go. Coming up, as I mentioned, a top 5 of 5 that you won't believe on the other side of the news agenda salvo.
Radio Chicago, this is AM 720. WGN.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5. Let's go. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Get on with it.
Yeah, if you say so. Top 5 most important, most newsworthy, or just dumbest things we find on audio in any given 24-hour period. So we start at
number 5.
Now, remember Jim Baker? He was a televangelist back in the 1980s. Ended up going to jail. Convicted on 24 counts of fraud and conspiracy. He had all kinds of problems. But he was building mansions and stuff with all of his parishioners' money. He had an air-conditioned doghouse for his dogs. He also might have had a girlfriend or two. And he had Tammy Faye, his wife, who, when he went off to prison, would, you know, kept the ministry going, who would sit and cry on television and you'd watch her mascara run about, you know, these are the anti-God forces trying to silence her husband. It was just one of those things where you stop and you wonder, who in the hell would fall for this? I felt so badly that people would be so needy or lost or lonely or whatever it was that a guy who was such an obvious huckster could take them. And he did. For years and years and years and years. Well, now he's back. He's back on television. He's been back on television for a while. I mean, he came out of jail it's got to be 25 years ago, at least now. But he has a woman who he claims is a doctor who has a product that can kill or deactivate the coronavirus. Dr. Cheryl Selman. She was on to tout her silver solution. The low, low price of $80 or $125 for the one that really works. Selman's doctoral specialty listed as an ND for naturopathic doctor. Is that a thing? I don't think that's a thing. Which means that she does not really have any kind of license.
God gave us this product, yes. I believe. Yes. We have it in cases. We use it all the time. I mean, I don't think I'd have made it without silver. This is amazing.
You never want to be without silver. It has been proven by the government that it has the ability to kill every pathogen it has ever been tested on, including SARS and HIV.
This influenza that is now circling the globe, you're saying that silver solution would be effective.
Well, let's say it hasn't been tested on this strain of the coronavirus.
Yeah, let's
but say
it's
that. Been tested on other strains of the coronavirus and has been able to eliminate it within 12 hours.
Well, now you have me feeling like a dummy, Roy. I bought $1,000 worth of this stuff over the weekend. They sold me.
I want to know why God is not smoting here.
No, this reminds me of the old school way of travelers with their little carts, and they'd have their little vials. They'd be like, put this on your head 3 times a day, and your hair will grow back, sir.
Snake oil salesman. Yes, it's exactly what it is. It's exactly what it is. Where is the Old Testament God when you need him?
Hope they accept returns. Feeling like
I don't think they do. I think all sales are final here from Dr. Selman.
It's a tough look for me.
Oh, my God. I mean, literally. Well, and it's amazing, man. It's amazing that he gets away with it. He just continues to do it. And there are still people, unfortunately, who don't get that they're being completely lied to.
Cheryl Selman sounded like a trustworthy name to me, Rose, so that was a big selling point.
Selman, my God, she sold me something. Why? That's one of them names.
Especially with Cheryl, S-H-E-R-R-I-L-L.
Cheryl.
What?
Cheryl Selman. She sure will sell you. Oh, my gosh. Isn't there some government agency that should be looking into this? Or are they afraid to do it right down in election year? All right, let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening in the traffic in the skies?
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV. Going to need him tonight.
Yes. Coming up after the news at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be joined by Linda Lavelle again. Now, Linda Lavelle, we talked to her last Thursday. She was one of the passengers on the Princess Diamond cruise ship that was docked in Japan, quarantined. They were taking people off the ship every day in ambulances because of the coronavirus. And now she has been, over the weekend, she was flown out. This is a harrowing story how they did this, too. They were taken off the ship. She and her husband were taken off the ship and with a number of other Americans and flown back to the United States. She's now in quarantine in Texas at a military base. We'll talk to her about what that experience was like. Her story about being on the Princess Diamond was just amazing. That was crazy enough. But this is really something, this story that you're about to hear. Coming up after the news at the bottom of the hour. All right, we're in the top 5 of 5. We worked our way up
to number 4.
Jussie Smollett's alleged accomplices, the Osandero brothers, ended up getting confronted by TMZ, of all places, here in Chicago. They're just walking around. I'll say, oh, look, here's TMZ. What do they think about Jussie Smollett now?
Do you guys feel any sympathy or do you feel bad at him at all?
We're actually praying for Jussie. We're praying that he builds up the courage to finally tell the truth.
Do you have any? What's your biggest regret?
Honestly, we just feel it takes away the attention from actual real situations that happen.
Well,
right now, we're just focused on the positive.
Are you going to be testifying to the trial?
If they call us to, we'll do what needs to be done.
We'll do what needs to be done. I think that's what they probably said to Jussie, too, right? Well, if you need it, yeah, listen. It seems like a wacky plan, but if you need us to do it, we'll do what needs to be done.
Couple of team players.
That's what they are. It does appear that these mopes are not really ill-intended.
Whatever you need, coach, put me in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like that they were part of like some sort of grandiose conspiracy against the people of the United States of America. They were like, well, Justice Smollett needs us to help him, you know, because he's got problems with his producers in Hollywood. He wants to prove the fact that, you know, it's dangerous here in Chicago. So we're just going to go along with it. These two dudes are from Chicago. A lot of people are thinking that they're like West African guys that, you know, are flown in by Justice Smollett for this. They're born and raised in Chicago. They are of Nigerian descent, and they have family back there, and they did immediately go there right after the fake news incident. But I don't know. I don't quite understand exactly what Jussie Smollett was thinking. I think nobody does. But I'm far less interested in what Jussie Smollett was doing, and far more interested in what our public officials here were doing, specifically the Cook County State's Attorney, in terms of just letting this go. The way it went. And I know it is a low-level crime. I get all that. And yes, there's carjackings and shootings. And there was a guy shot literally. It was on both the red and blue line simultaneously today. There's a lot of crime. There's a serious problem here. But that is the bottom of the iceberg. The tip of the iceberg was this. Because this, in and of itself, it just seems like the level of way that people who are doing the wrong thing are being let off the hook in the county of Cook is really disconcerting. I didn't even intend that to rhyme. Okay. Checking in at
number three.
Several Chicago aldermen are calling for changes to the city laws after a horse was found dead in Englewood. Police and animal care control found two horses in a yard at 61st and Carpenter. After receiving multiple calls requesting well-being checks on the animals, one of the horses was dead when officials arrived. The Alderman Ray Lopez, not the alderman from that ward, but Alderman Ray Lopez, posted photos of the horse on his Facebook and Twitter accounts. He claims the horses had no food or water or shelter, recovered with feces. The alderman claims the city received complaints going back to the summer.
Our law is so vague with regards to what people can own, and now as we see the prevalence of urban farming and people trying to be more holistic with, you know, growing their own foods, you know, we're seeing a surge in new animals coming into an urban environment.
Are we? I mean, I know we're, okay, we saw the goats. We talked to the goat guy from Austin, the neighborhood on the west side, and he's got people that come over and want to, you know, be with his goats, but he's raising goats for goat yoga. And because it's, you know, for literally, I mean, who's doing goat yoga? Goofy white people, right? I mean, that really is the issue. So I suppose if you're raising animals for goofy white people, it's okay. if you're raising, I don't know what this dude was doing with the horses, and I love horses, and I don't want to see bad things happen to horses. And horses are incredibly sturdy and incredibly delicate all at the same time. So you have to be, you have to know what you're doing. And it does not appear that this guy knew what he was doing. And I don't know, if there's two horses just standing in a lot in a neighborhood, don't you want to just call somebody about it? Right? I mean, if Mr. Ed and Trigger are standing there, I mean, aren't you like, hey, what, I mean, what do you do? At least 311, because I don't know what they do at 311. So I figure that if they do something at 311, it's probably this, that call them if you see a horse standing in somebody's side yard. Here is the owner, Leo Beltran, says that he was just trying to care for sick animals.
What other people are saying and making up stories, they don't know, you know, my life, how it is. I love animals. I love horses. I'm not doing it to have a farm in the city. I just did it to take care of an animal. That's the only reason I did it for. And like I said, to come to a point where they're saying that my dog is eating a horse, it's just outrageous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad he brought that up because, yes, that's what they were saying. One of the calls to 911 was the dog was eating the horse. Now, it's believable, right? Because, you know, horse has been a component in dog food. But it's also just as likely as the horse is going up and ever the dog was going up and sniffing the horse and, you know, trying to nudge the horse and stuff like that. Because that's what dogs do. When something, you know, I mean, when the owner likes something, I'm assuming he likes the horses. And what, and, you know, with all due respect to Mr. Beltran, what was he thinking? Was he going to settle the horse? Was he going to ride it to work? Is this going to be the, maybe, I'm afraid the city council might even consider this instead of the scooters. Maybe horses. Do we ever think about that? Like a special horse lane in Chicago? You know, there will be some goof who wants to suggest this before it's all said and done. Because it'll be better for the environment or some such thing. All right. Checking it up.
Number two.
Delta Airlines CEO Ed Bastian has added a bit of fuel to the great seat recline debate. Fired up on Twitter, he was on CNBC's Squawk Box to announce Delta's plans to go carbon neutral. That's good news. Maybe you should think about horses, too. Maybe horses on a treadmill helping fly the planes. He was pressed to comment on the Reclinegate after that viral thing last week where an American Airlines passenger reclined her seat to have a man sitting behind her just punch the back of the seat over and over and over again.
What's the etiquette, though? I want to know what the etiquette is. If you're a tall guy, Ed, you are a tall guy. You are in coach.
I am.
And somebody's in front of you
I
and
am.
They want to go all the way back. They paid for the ticket.
I think customers have the right to recline, but I think the proper thing to do is if you're gonna recline into somebody that you ask if it's okay first, and then you do it. But
oh, you have
at
to
the
ask?
Same time, I think it's
well,
every
that's interesting. You think you?
I never say anything myself, though. I think if someone knows there's a tall person behind them and they want to recline their seat, I think the polite thing would be to make certain it was okay. I never recline because I don't think it's something that, since I'm the CEO of the airline, I should be reclining my seat. And I never say anything if someone reclines into me.
Yeah, how many times do you think that guy really flies on coach? Let's be honest. Let's be honest. Right? I mean, don't you think he's taking a private jet everywhere? And then every once in a while he shows up on coach on the 45-minute flight.
Some sort of marketing maneuver. They film the whole thing. They throw it up on the website.
We're just like you.
We're just like you.
Right.
Once, like, a couple every quarter.
Oh, I'm going from Atlanta to Mobile, Alabama. Okay. 45 minutes. I'm good.
And 20-minute delays and lost my bag. Just like you, I swear. Totally.
I saw this happen last night on a plane where there was a request. I thought that was pretty cool. And I had no idea that that was... I stopped reclining a long time ago I just don't want to have a conversation. I don't want to have a conversation with anybody on an airplane. I want to actually pull down the oxygen mask and put it over my head. Just say, I can't talk right now. I'm breathing oxygen.
Just get one of the medical masks. Nobody will talk to you.
That's why I told you earlier on the program. I mentioned when I was flying out on Friday, there was a guy sitting next to me in one of those medical masks. I don't like that either. I'm going to dress like Brad Pitt in Ad Astra when I get on the plane. I'm just going to be in a spacesuit and sit there. It's going to be uncomfortable, all air conditioned. I don't know, whatever it is. But I won't recline. I'm afraid now to recline. And then people recline into me. And then I get all mad about that. But they're generally... I had a guy that looked like Bernie Sanders recline into me last night. And it was like, what do I do about this? Like an old man, you know, it's like, what am I going to, like, you know, all right, you can't do that, sir. But it was like, whatever. You just got to put up with it. All right. And finally, I've been looking forward to this.
Number one.
All right. Billie Eilish is having quite a year, right? She swept the Grammys. She's 18 years old, youngest person ever to win Album of the Year at the Grammys. And now she is going to be the voice of the new Bond film.
That I've fallen for a lie. You were never on my side. Fool me once, fool me twice. Are you death or paradise? Now you'll never see me cry. There's just no time to die.
I don't know. I think when you put it with, you know, those Bond opening theme graphics and that, you know, the montage that they do is always super cool. Right. But the, I don't know. And I love Billie. I love that. I bought that album right after the Grammys. It's great.
She's having a good run.
She is having a good run. And it is haunting, right? So you got that going for
you. I think it works.
All right. Well, there you have it. That's the theme to No Time to Die, the new James Bond film coming out in April. All right, we're going to close up the top 5-5. Then on the other side of Jen DeSalvo's news, we're going to talk to a woman we talked to last week who was stranded on a cruise ship on the Diamond Princess in Japan, and now she is off that but is quarantined at a military base in Texas. The harrowing story of how she got there coming up after the news. But first, we close the top 5-5.
The top 5-5.
It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right. Thursday, we talked to Linda Lavelle on this program. Linda Lavelle has the great pleasure of being the mother-in-law to Dan Ponce. And I'm assuming it's a great pleasure, but that's not why we're talking to her, because she was on the Diamond Princess cruise ship. And the coronavirus broke out on the Diamond Princess. It docked in Japan. And Linda, as you were telling us last week, you guys were docked in Japan and quarantined there for a couple of weeks, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
2 weeks.
For almost 2 weeks, yes.
And
12 days.
You were confined to your cabin, and then they would have people come by and give you the meals and water and whatever else, you know, that they could possibly, you know, give you. And people were allowed to go out on their balconies. If you've seen the pictures of this ship, you've seen that it's, you know, that almost all of the cabins have balconies. These are like buildings,
yes,
that are plopped down onto, you know, the base of a ship. And this is the harrowing part. Let me just give you these statistics, and we'll talk about how they got you off the ship, which you're now in Texas at a, mm-hmm, at a quarantine site in Texas. But in this intervening days, there were 2,600 passengers on board this ship and about 1,000 crew members. And
yes,
there were 10 cases of coronavirus reported on February 4th. Health Ministry says as of today, the number of cases confirmed aboard have now reached 454. Yes. Now, what I'm interested in is, with the quarantine being what it was, how is it possible that it went from 4 to 454? What is your thought on how that happened?
Okay, well, I think, I'm sorry, they're delivering my dinner right now, actually. Okay, thank you. This is just like they did on the ship.
Are they all like in full protective gear when they're doing that?
Yes, they are. Wow. Yes, and yeah, they're not allowed to come in. Okay, your question was, would you repeat that?
Wait, I want to get back to that moment for a second, and then I'll ask the question again. But so how do they deliver the food to you?
The food is in a bag, in a brown paper bag, mm-hmm, and they are all dressed up and have protective gear on, and they have plastic gloves and something covering their head and full masks, and they are not allowed to have any contact with us. They can put the food down, and then we just take it and shut the door.
So they walk, they open the door, they put the food down, you take it and close the door.
They knock on the door, and when they knock on the door, we are to have our mask on, our face mask on, and then they put the food down, and we just grab it. So that is how it works.
Wow.
It's
okay.
Kind of different. Yeah.
Yeah. And was that similar to what they did on the ship?
This is a lot more efficient and faster.
Because on the ship, my question, Linda, was there are 454 confirmed cases now on board.
Yes.
And in just over two weeks, it went from 4 to 454, and people had been,
yes,
in quarantine for 2 weeks. So the question is, while people were in quarantine,
yes,
how did it grow so exponentially? Do you think it was being passed along despite all the precautions being taken?
Well, I do, because I think the crew was still working. They were supposed to be quarantined too, but they were still working. And they live in such close quarters that they were probably being infected or already infected by people who were on the ship, and then they were delivering all of our food and making our food, I assume, and then they were, in turn, they were infecting other people. Wow. I think that's how it's all happened.
Wow. All right, so I want to get to the story of how when they decided to take these, you were joined by a number of other Americans in this evacuation. Mm-hmm. I want to go through the story of the evacuation with you and now what it's been like in your, you're in Texas at a military facility, right? A medical military facility? Is that right?
Right. Well, we're at Lackland Air Force Base. We are not in a medical facility, but just on base. Mm-hmm.
At Lackland, right, which is a very large, important Air Force base. All right, hold on one second. Right. We'll come right back to that. But first, let's get the traffic and the weather here. Rocon Show right here on 720 WGNR. We're talking to Linda Lavelle. She was a passenger on the Diamond Princess cruise ship, which for the last couple of weeks has been docked in Japan after a coronavirus outbreak. Started with four people 2 weeks ago, and now there are 454 people with the virus. The United States did evacuate the Americans off of that cruise ship. Linda and her husband Jim, originally from Vincennes, Indiana. I think you still live in Vincennes, right?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
And you were evacuated off the ship along with the other Americans and taken to Lackland Air Force Base in Texas for continued medical support for anybody who starts to become symptomatic, but so far nobody mm-hmm. is, according to the press reports at least. And and then you'll be quarantined there for the next 2 weeks. So let's talk a little bit about how they got you off. What happened there?
Oh, gosh. Well, it seemed like it all happened within a matter of a few hours. We got a letter from the embassy, and they told us to be ready that evening, so we packed our bags, and about 9 that evening, the buses came, and it took approximately 3 to 4 hours to board everyone. There were about 13 buses, and then they took us to a place where we had a cargo plane. I'm not sure what airport it even was that we were at, and so then we sat in the bus for probably about 3 more hours, and then we boarded this huge cargo train or plane, which was absolutely something that I had never even dreamed of. It had a big bio hazard trailer in the middle of it, and all the personnel had on the hazmat suits. They were very efficient, very welcoming, mm-hmm. and it was a very small crew. I bet there weren't maybe 8 people that helped us on the trip over.
Wow. And how many Americans were among you? What was your traveling party?
I think there were just about 200 per plane. There were 2 planes, so a little less than 200 people per plane.
So when you get on the plane, are they like plane seats, or were you having to sit against the sides? What was it like?
Well, it's hard to explain. It looks like a huge room in a warehouse, maybe. And there are seats in the plane. There are seats that still have ashtrays. So they obviously took them out of old airplanes.
Yes.
The floor is very uneven. There are all kinds of things, objects sticking up out of the floor,
right.
So you have to be
hooks,
real careful.
Grappling equipment,
right.
And, yeah, things like
right.
that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we had porta potties. There were 4 porta potties in there, which was an experience. And
How long was the flight across?
Well, and that was another thing. We weren't sure where we were going. We asked when we left if we were going to California, and they said, well, they weren't sure that we were either going to California or San Antonio. And we found out then for sure that we were in San Antonio when we landed. That's when we knew for sure we were here. We had been told throughout the flight that they weren't 100% sure where we were going. We might go to California first and then to San Antonio, but anyway, we ended
up
here.
So were all the Air Force personnel or U.S. personnel, were they all wearing hazmat
equipment? Oh, yes, yes.
And now were you guys, as you guys had been exposed to the coronavirus on this cruise ship and taken off the cruise ship on the bus, were you guys, when you were being transported, asked to wear those kinds of things?
No, we just had a mask on.
Okay.
We had a mask. Our bus driver had the full hazmat suit on. Everybody we contacted or came into contact with had those suits on, but all the passengers in the bus had to wear the masks, and they were all cruise passengers, so we had all been, everyone had been exposed because we had all been on the Diamond Princess.
And how long was the flight? Do you have any recollection?
Oh, the flight, yes, the flight was 12 and a half hours.
Wow. All right, yeah. And then you land at Lackland Air Force Base, and they take you off and they put you on a bus, same sort of drill. Everybody, all the people who are coming into contact with you there are in full hazmat. And then where do they take you on the base? Where are you now?
Now we are in housing. I'm not sure where it is. It's on the base somewhere, and everyone has a room. And they deliver our food. We were just told a few minutes ago that we could not go outside. We have to stay in our room. We had previously been told that we could go outside because there's a big fence around this whole complex. And we were told as long as we stayed inside the fence, because there's grass and we had been told that we could take a walk or whatever. But now, I just received a message that said the CDC said everyone is to stay inside. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. But
and you have to be there for 2 weeks, right?
Yes, we have to be here for 2 weeks. I do know that as we were flying here, we didn't know this, but later on we found out that there were people on our flight that had tested positive. They were in isolation on the flight, but they had tested positive, and they were also on the other flight. So,
we were bringing back people who had tested positive, and I'm assuming that they've now been taken to medical facilities.
Yes,
you know, at least off of your plane. Did both planes land at Lackland? Do you know?
No, the other one landed at Travis Air Force Base in California, and those people are housed there.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah,
they decided mid-flight, or they at least didn't tell you until mid-flight or end of flight where you guys are going. Yeah. They restricted? Obviously, they haven't restricted your ability to call us, but have they restricted your ability when you were in transit in terms of communication?
In transit, as far as off the plane, you mean in the bus?
Yeah.
That type of thing?
Yeah.
No, we could call people or text. You know, people were texting. So, no, they've not said anything like that. They were wonderful. And when we got off at Lackland, we had to go through processing. They knew we were tired, and they had food and drinks for us, water and Cokes and things. And they were so welcoming and made us feel great.
Wow.
Even though we had jet lag.
Yeah. And when did you arrive?
We arrived, oh gosh.
I know, sorry. It's Monday now.
I think it was 6 o'clock this morning, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
And all right, so for the next 2 weeks, you're not going to be able to go outside, at least at the moment. That's the standing order.
Right.
It could change, I would imagine. But do you have television? I mean, what is it? Is this like a hotel room, or is this like an office?
It is. Okay. It's and they told us they were Army barracks, but they said, you know, it's like a stripped down version of a Marriott.
Yeah.
And that's probably right. It's called Air Force Inns.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a room with everything we need.
Right.
It's fine.
Well, Linda, yeah. I hope you'll let us reach out to you again and
sure.
talk about what your next 2 weeks are going to be like as you're there in quarantine because you came off of the Diamond Princess in Japan, the cruise ship that's making all the news here. Now, 454 people, including, as you're telling us, a number of Americans, we don't know exactly the number yet, that came across back with you from there who have tested positive for the coronavirus. So we'll be back in touch with you. Linda, thank you so much for taking your time with us.
Thank you.
All right.
Sure. Linda, thank you.
Linda Lavelle from Vincennes, Indiana. All right. We have got the WGN news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way right after this.
Radio Chicago, WGN.
Rocancho, right here on 720 WGN. All right, that music can mean only one thing. Mike Monaco's joining us, legal consultant to the Rocancho unpaid position. And there are a couple of things that need to be addressed here today because there's a lot going on. First of all, I do want to point this out, Mike, because we talked to Aaron Katursky from ABC News earlier, and it turns out that the Harvey Weinstein trial basically has come to an end, and now the jury has the case. They start deliberation tomorrow morning. And what is going to be so completely interesting about this is that there are two, I don't want to spend too much time on this because we did already earlier in the program, and you can pick that up, I'm sure, on the podcast.
I'll pick up on the podcast.
But I think it's fascinating. I think that there's two charges of criminal sexual assault, two different victims here.
Yes.
And on this one victim, I don't think they're going to convict him.
Man. The woman, man?
Yes. Yes, her name is Man.
Right. The woman, man. Not a man.
Yes,
the woman named Man.
Man or whatever.
Well, yeah. Well, she was cross-examined for 3 days and then no redirect because you know they were afraid of her because she started crying and was hysterical.
She went on to have a consensual relationship with him after the event that is
that's true of both of them. Both of the women had consensual relationships.
So what happens in a situation like that?
That's a good question. That's why they put on the other four witnesses to say that they too had been abused by Harvey. In a similar sort of way.
And that Harvey required, and this is the unspeakable part of this. Harvey required an injection into his, and I'm going to use the technical term here, junk, so that he could actually perform these acts. And the women were, and there was another person in the room that was doing that. There was an assistant that would come in and do it.
That has nothing to do with the case, though.
No, but it is in the case.
Just something that you're interested in.
No, but it does have to do with the case, doesn't it? In some respect, that there
because
were
of proof
witnesses.
That it happened?
Yes, and that it's...
Well, the one woman, the first woman, was...
What's the duress issue here? Because it has to be non-consensual.
Well,
has to be
that's
duress.
The question. That's the question in every state now, and it's all... And I don't know if it's changing or not, but it is the question.
I mean, there are women who, there's physical duress, there are people who are chemically
in
altered.
In theory,
right?
You can say yes, 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 and then say no. Mm-hmm. If you're a woman, you can say no at the end, and you're supposed to, and the fellow is supposed to stop, of course.
Right. Yes.
And whenever you say no, you're supposed to stop.
I'm the one who says no, but yes.
Yes, you're the one. So here, it seems like the women were certainly, it seems like they're willing to be with him or at least have relationships with him after the so-called
event. Do you think he's going to get off on this?
I think there's a good chance.
He's got a good chance, right?
He has a good chance.
Wow. And for
They've got better cases in L.A. against him.
And he's got to go to L.A. and face that.
He's got to go to L.A. and face those cases, yeah. And they're two Chicago lawyers, you know. Donna Rotuno, I thought, did a great job in the closing argument.
In
Harvey Weinstein's case. She's from Chicago.
Weinstein.
It's Harvey Weinstein's case.
Yeah. So there is no... there's no end to his legal problems. I mean, he's going to be sued civilly here, and that's going to be that's a totally different.
That's totally
level
different. Here. That's what's interesting. Donna mentioned that Gloria Allred was in the courtroom during her closing
doing
argument.
The civil suits. Yeah,
during her closing argument,
and Donna Rotuno, the Chicagoan, is defending
Harvey in the criminal case in New York. Chicago lawyer Donna Rotuno her friend Damon Chagronis, mm-hmm. and I thought she did a great job in the closing argument.
You know, as great a pariah as he is, and the stories, I mean, we sort of get a sense of what happened here. You don't sort of, you do get a sense of what has happened throughout his career, right? That he was sexualizing the job, and making all these women feel uncomfortable and then drawing them into uncomfortable situations, whether it was either making him, making them watch him take a shower was one of the things that was a, that has been alleged by multiple actresses in this. But it's interesting, but you've had this raft of people, of women who've come forward, and they all have the same story. And some of them are generations, you know, decades apart.
Yeah. No, you know, the...
He's a bad guy. There's no way about it. But the question is, will they be able to prosecute him criminally?
Because the two... I think you're exactly right. The two women who are at real issue here are Miriam Haley and Jessica Mann. And each of them had long-standing relationships with him after the alleged incidents occurred. There's another woman, Annabella Ciora, who's also involved. Right. She has a three-decades-old alleged rape case.
Right. I don't know that she had a relationship with him afterwards.
I don't know that either. But I know this. They did not charge him with the crime specifically with her.
Well, yes, because it was past the statute of limitations.
Yes, but she's mentioned in the predatory act thing for both cases.
Because she's the establisher by saying he had done this before, so right. He is now a sexual predator.
Predator, right, exactly.
Yeah. So if they can prove that up.
Yeah.
It seems, it occurs to me that after hearing what all this, I think a lot of people, because of, you know, there are other more pressing issues, right, in the
world?
News right now and in the world, whether it's the Wuhan virus. We're just talking to a woman who was just transported off of a cruise ship in Japan to Lackland Air Force Base and is going to be in quarantine while she's watching all these other people, including, we just learned from her, that there are Americans who are positive for the coronavirus who were transported with her back to their, both at Travis Air Force Base in California and at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. So,
but she's not positive.
She's not positive at the moment. No, but it's, you know, it's
scary.
That's
very
a very scary situation.
Scary that doctors are dying.
Yes, but people are not paying any attention to, you know, to so much of the Harvey Weinstein thing. I just want to bring people up to date that tomorrow, if the jury comes back and it's not guilty, to give them a little perspective on why that may be. But he will be going to California to stand more charges, so we'll see what happens there. All right, back with Mike Monaco, but first, let's check in with Lauren Lapka. What's happening on the roads and in the skies?
And for news at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlan, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV news at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
This is Rokan Show. Thank you, Kevin. That was excellent.
You're welcome.
Very well done. And I'm thinking about probioticing myself now that you've mentioned
it. Give it a whirl. I can feel the effects.
All right. So, Michael Monaco.
Aren't you on something already?
I am. I'm on a lot of things. Michael Monaco is joining us right now in the studio. He's our chief legal analyst, unpaid position. We were just talking about the Harvey Weinstein case. If tomorrow or Wednesday, the jury comes back in that case in New York and gives a not guilty in those, don't be surprised by it.
No.
It is. If it comes back
in,
guilty.
In an ordinary case where, you know, you had an ordinary defendant without the baggage that he brought with him to the courthouse, you would expect a not guilty.
Right. It's just that everybody kind of knows also that he's a dirtbag, but these cases were not as compelling legally as perhaps the cases in California.
Right. Not the two that they... that are specifically charged, right?
Right, because they both went on to have relations with him.
And the one witness had a bad experience as a witness. Miss Mann did not do well as a witness.
Right. Okay, right. Yeah. Important point. Okay, let's talk about Michael Avenatti for a second.
Yeah, he had a bad week.
Yeah, he did. Michael Avenatti, who was the anti-Trump lawyer, right?
Yeah.
He was the guy who represented
Stormy
Daniels.
Came out of nowhere and was apparently thinking about running for president.
Yes. And he became a bit of a media darling.
Darling,
yes,
exactly. Like you,
like me. I'm a darling.
He's a darling.
He was on CNN quite a bit. He was on
MSNBC quite a bit.
He
less elsewhere.
Although I will tell you, this is why you should watch The Circus on Showtime, because The Circus caught up with him a couple of times, and they weren't buying his act.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it was really interesting to watch. It was like, it wasn't like, you know, how Fox News wouldn't buy his act because, you know, it would all be the politics of it.
Anti-Trump.
These guys kind of look at it from a different perspective. They look at it from the perspective of Washington insiders, like, I know, I've seen this guy a million times before. Although he was a total thorn in the side of the president, and he had a bit of a winner of a case with Stormy Daniels.
Not as much as we thought it was going to be a winner, because it eventually faded. So
right, but I mean, it faded because there was a settlement, right?
I'm not sure. I don't remember that, but I know what happened yesterday. He got convicted.
Well, your client Michael Cohen was the one trying to make the settlement.
No, no. That was the original settlement, right? Yeah. I'm talking after Avenatti got involved.
Yes.
Yes.
So, all right, so go ahead. So what this is, this other thing has nothing to do with Trump whatsoever.
No, nothing.
This case with Avenatti was about Nike, trying to shake down Nike.
Apparently he was hurting for money, apparently, according to the government. Although the judge didn't want them to go far into that. But hurting for money, had a client from California who apparently had an argument that he knew that Nike was paying young people to decide on where they would go to college in order to use Nike products. And
these are young athletes.
Young athletes, right. And he called Nike up. And you got to give credit to the Nike lawyers. I mean, if because what they did was they went immediately to the government, because to them it sounded like a shakedown. Because he said to them, unless you give me $22.5 million.
Million dollars.
Right. In order for me to conduct a investigation into this, into what I'm telling you is going on, which may or may not have been going on, then I'm going to reveal this to the press, and you'll lose $4 to $5 billion of your brand money.
So what do you want? You want $22 million or $4 or $5 billion?
Right.
That to me sounds like an extortionate threat, Michael. Yeah. And I'm no lawyer. Although I play one on the radio.
Played one, yes. Yes. But the point is this. Is it just a legal negotiation, or is it someone shaking down, trying to shake down? Now, according and what the government had, they had, so because once the government, once the lawyers for Nike went to the FBI tape recorded all the other phone calls. And the other phone calls.
And look out.
Yeah. And the other phone calls, Avenatti did not sound so good. It sounded like he was shaking them down rather than having a legitimate legal argument to help get some money from.
He's looking at real time here now.
He's looking at not only real time here, he's got two other cases pending. One more in New York and one in L.A.
Not related to Nike.
Not related to Nike. He's got another case pending where Stormy Daniels.
Yeah, she's suing him.
No, he stole money from her. He's charged with stealing money from Stormy Daniels.
So there's a criminal case
against him for that.
Yeah.
And the other real problem for him, he's got a tax case in L.A. That he has not paid all his taxes.
Yes, he may have had a problem with that. So he's looking right now, currently.
He's in jail now.
Yes.
He's been in jail, he's been in solitary confinement during the trial.
Because
he got locked up during the pre-trial events.
Because he wouldn't shut up, right?
I'm not sure why. I think he was trying to contact witnesses. In a bad way.
Oh,
because you're allowed to contact witnesses unless the judge tells you.
He's looking at 42 years.
That's the maximum, but he won't get that in this case. He might get serious time.
Yeah,
I think he's more likely to get time in the LA cases, but we'll see.
Do you think in total he's going to get more than a dime, as they like to say?
That's more than
10 years.
The way you use this language, it's as if you step right out of the joint, as they say.
Is he going to get more than a dime? Because he gets more than a dime, he's got to go to the big house.
Yeah, he's got to go.
He's not going to a farm.
No, he's not going to a farm, right? He's going someplace with real bars.
I'm saying that because I'm now impersonating a Chicago politician, because they're very familiar with all of these things.
You too. You're familiar with
them. Yeah, I'm very familiar with the idea.
You know these things.
All right. So let's.
But that's an interesting case. And Avenatti was talk about going from the top to the bottom. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, I don't think he was. He was on the top of a really smarmy wave, right? I mean, he came to public prominence through Stormy Daniels.
Your point that the CNN loved him, MSNBC loved him, and they boosted him. He was on The View. He's on all these other shows.
They made him seem very
legitimate.
They loved
him, and they talked about him as a legitimate candidate for president.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I'm just saying that's what they talked about him.
Yeah. Well, they talked about him wanting to be president. I don't know. I don't know if anybody. I kind of find it hard to believe that Chris Cuomo thought he was a legitimate, contender, or Anderson Cooper, who I like to watch. I go home and watch Anderson Cooper tear up at least once a week. 7 o'clock. All right. So I think that's probably bad for Avenatti.
Bad week for him.
Yeah. Does it reflect positively on the president because he was an enemy of the president? I'm not quite so sure about that. Because the Stormy Daniels thing, I mean, the whole thing was sorted from the very beginning.
Well, I'm involved in that case only because I've represented Mr. Cohen, who, as you correctly stated, was involved in settling the original case with Stormy Daniels.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so we can stop talking about that now. Yeah. I think that's his way of going, shut up. All right, I want to ask you about Andrew McCabe.
Yeah, Andrew McCabe.
The ex-FBI official.
Who was adverse to, of course, in the president's mind, he was adverse to the president.
Yes, and he was, and he's now not going to be charged, in a criminal indictment.
And for 20 years, he was in the FBI, and for most of that time, working for Republicans.
Right. And now, what? Now, what? Explain why the why now it is not relevant to charge him, because he is, you know, as we said, he was, you know, 20 years in the FBI. He was fired by Jeff Sessions, been a punching bag for the president. Right. Further, right. You know, he's raised the ire of the president a number of times, and he's one of those guys on the rallies. The president, you know, points to dirty cops, dirty cops, dirty cops. McCabe is one of them.
But he was a highly respected FBI official for a long time under Republicans and some Democrats.
So when the Justice Department was looking into the allegation that he misled investigators about his decision to share internal communications with a reporter during 2016. So it's basically a leak.
And he, right. And he had, according to him, you hear him explain it, he said he had a legitimate part of his job was to discuss matters with reporters. That was a legitimate part of what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he did it in this case. It wasn't illegal, wasn't improper, didn't do it with any bad motivation. Now, what the president was upset was his wife was running as a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
In for some, I think,
a state in Virginia.
In Virginia, right. Yeah. State House, I think, in Virginia. And she lost the election. But the president thought that that meant that her husband was...
And she was taking, she was taking Hillary Clinton money. It was the way the president said it. But what was really going on there was that the state Democratic Party in Virginia had, you know, which then they're not only giving money to the Clinton campaign in 2016, but they were giving money to the state run cases as well.
And so, you know, if anybody should know that husbands and wives sometimes don't have the same political beliefs, it should be the president, because he's got. What's Miss Conway?
Kellyanne Conway.
Kellyanne Conway working for her.
Yeah.
Him and her husband is like unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it can happen. So anyway, the point.
It can happen.
Right.
So, like Carville too. Carville and his wife.
Yes. And but the point is that they're not going to charge him.
No,
they're not going to charge him.
Which they
should pursue this. Okay.
They shouldn't.
And I'm sure that's going to make him mad. But you have an interesting thing happening here at the Justice Department.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
just going to get you. I've got about a minute and a half left here. So William Barr has been accused of being political here in the Roger Stone case. And it appears that Roger Stone now, according to the judge, is going to be sentenced this week. There will be a sentencing this week.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens there. But, you know, for intervening in that, we had Terwilliger on, who was a former assistant attorney general of the United States. And he was like, well, you know, the attorney general is always looking into sentencing cases. And he did this prior to the president tweeting about it. And then the attorney general, William Barr, went out and said, hey, stop. Stop tweeting.
The trouble is this. He's so close to the president, Stone. And the president is acting as if he wants to protect him.
Yes, that's correct. He is acting like that. And now over 1,000 former Justice Department employees have signed on to a letter. They've been doing this online throughout the day. It's like close to 2,000 now.
They're upset that
William Barr should step aside. You're a former assistant U.S. attorney in the United States of America here for the Northern District of Illinois. What say you? Should William Barr step aside?
What he's done has been very, very difficult for line assistants to accept.
Line assistants, line prosecutors,
line
as they call them.
Line prosecutors to accept.
Right. L-I-N-E.
L-I-N-E, because he seems to be acting as, from the beginning, when he misdiagnosed or misappreciated what the Mueller report had to say, from the very beginning, when that happened, it sounded like he was trying to just, he perceived his goal.
His analysis of the Mueller report when he came out he had to break it down, right? So his.
Well, he didn't have to break it down, but he did.
Chose to. His treatise on it it was more of an outline.
Exactly.
His outline of it.
There's no crime here.
Mueller report.
Don't look here. Nothing to look at here.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Michael Monaco, attorney at law.
Nice to see you.
Thank you very much. I'm feeling a little like I've got the corona now.
Oh, great. You're one of the few people who could probably get it over the radio.
That's probably true. Yeah. All right, let's now check in with Jen DeSalvo and the WGN Northwestern Medicine. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, my friends, let's talk about this for a second. I saw not one, not two, but three stories over the last 2 days about Hollywood and other sorts of famous people in the United States of America, beautiful people, who have chosen to get face tattoos. I do not understand this. Six celebrities are showing off new face tattoos. And in some cases, one of the face tattoos is a sneaker and the other and a bloody buzzsaw. Okay, so let me just go through these. We talked to you last week about Presley Gerber. That's Kai Gerber's brother. Now, this is Cindy Crawford's kids. Cindy Crawford and that Randy Gerber guy, who is close to a billionaire now. She's obviously very successful, but he's now close to a billionaire because he and Clooney came up with that tequila. They didn't even come up with it, but they just put they did the commercial, and the next thing you know, they sell it for $1 billion. God bless him. I wish I'd thought of it. Presley Gerber, 20-year-old actor and model, has a number of visible tattoos, but now he posted a video in which he's got the word misunderstood all in caps beneath his right eyeball.
I have that across my chest, but I figured the face would be a little aggressive.
Now, Amber Rose, this is not the Amber. Wasn't there a woman in Chicago working sports named Amber Rose?
Yeah, I'm sure at some point. Sounds like a go-to sportscaster name.
Yes.
Or stripper, you know. Yeah, or
right.
Or both.
Yes, but it turns out this was Kanye's ex-girlfriend, Amber Rose. And she's known for, I don't know, she's like one of those instant celebrities, just add water, you know, types. Every once in a while she pops up on TMZ or whatever. She made headlines earlier this month when she debuted the words bash slash on her forehead. Because that's now her son is Bash and Slash, which is her newborn, that she and her boyfriend have now put them on. He's got it up on his head, too.
So that when they forget, they can look in the mirror and be like, oh, yeah, your kids. Where are they?
Well, the guy, the dad, has his Alexander Edwards, has the dates of his two kids. Birth on his head. So he's got 10/10/19 and 2/21/13 on his forehead with a lightning bolt in between them. I saw the pictures of this today. They also have, this is interesting, they both have real short cropped hair.
Yeah, I saw that.
And then it's in some form of like psychedelic color, like, you know, something very, very bright. Now, you know, I don't want to sound anachronistic. I don't want to sound like an old man complaining about the Beatles being too loud. I don't want to sound like that. But I do not get this, because the face tattoo, unless you are a Maori warrior from Papua New Guinea, has very, very little long-lasting value. Now, if you're a warrior, and it's going to keep you alive. Okay, I get it. But then you'd have to get close enough to your adversary for them to read it and go, I'm going to run in the other direction. To get a tattoo now, and again, a tattoo, so you want to get a tattoo on a part of your body that you know, is like a sleeve or something like that, fine. I thought the sleeve was a bad idea, because a lot of people go into the corporate world and it's very hard to cover up the sleeve. And it's when you do it. But if you want to do it in somewhere in your body that's not normally visible and it means something to you, who cares? That's all your business. But you do it on your face or you do it on your neck. The neck tattoo, I think specifically, has got some issues. Because that neck tattoo, that's like prison art, right? That's like something you got that just basically says to the world, I either have or will kill someone. I don't understand that. like on the front, like near the like the breathing
part.
Yeah,
it hurts so bad.
Yes, who would do that? Now you know. Let's discuss it. You have a tattoo.
I do.
Yeah, and you have a tattoo that's on your sort of on your back.
Yeah, it's on my back, up towards the neck, kind of where both meet.
Yeah, and it's not a small tattoo.
It's not that small, but it's not big. But it's hidden usually by my clothes or hair. Well, when my hair was longer, but still kind of now.
And it says Veritas, which is mm-hmm. Latin for truth.
Truth. Yep. Right.
Okay. All right. You're right on the edge. That's all I'm going to say right now. Right on the edge. I'm going to say that it's. I'm approving it for the moment.
Wow.
Hold on. I'm sorry. Hit the wrong button. I'm approving it for the moment. I'm giving it a yes for the moment. But still. But we're watching you. If you get a teardrop tattoo, you're moving over to the other side of the ledger.
I think I'd start with purple hair before I went face tattoo.
Okay.
Purple hair is hot right now.
It is. Actually, lavender hair is strangely in.
It's okay. Straight again, I'm going to sound like that guy. Back in my day, we didn't have lavender hair. I'm going to tell you, I'm not a fan of the lavender hair. But at least it's changeable, right? It doesn't matter. You can do whatever you want. Like the Billie Eilish, she's got green hair. Fine. She won't always have green hair, and it will be okay. And I get it. It's a statement. Fine. All right. Sally won all the Grammys. I can't blame her for anything. I love her music. I'm willing to accept the green hair and go, oh, that's kind of cool because it's on her. But I'm telling you, a guy with a bloody chainsaw on his forehead is an idiot. What if your kids came home with this? Maybe your kids have come home. What do you do if your kids are asking you to get a face tattoo? What are you telling them? 312-981-7200.
They're not asking.
Well, what happens if they bring a friend over and that guy has a face tattoo? And you know, as a parent, you know this. You see the people they bring over and then you go, uh-oh, what's going to happen next? All right, your phone calls coming up. And then more of the... And we'll find out what Kevin's tattoos are, because apparently he has them, too. Just won't tell us. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back. But first, here is Lauren. She's got the traffic and the weather.
Now he's getting a tattoo, yeah. He's getting ink done. He asked for a 13, but they drew a 31. Friends say he's trying too hard, and he's not quite hip. But in his own mind, he's the dumbest trap.
We're talking about the face tattoo. 312-981-7200. It's been a very busy show of all kinds of important things. And I'll review those for you in just a few minutes. But we're talking about this story. It's six different celebrities over the last like 4 days have revealed a face tattoo. Okay. Now, you see, when I was a kid, my dad would tell me, because in the military, you know, the tattoos were not... The Navy had a different rule about tattoos, but the other forces, they did not want the tattoo. It was a very, the tattoo in some respects, even in the medical community, was considered to be a mental defect if you had a tattoo. It was like, oh, somebody, that's bad. Something went wrong there. Then the tattoo took on, you know, the guys coming back from World War II, and they put their ship on their arms or whatever it happened to be. You know, then they sort of took off a little bit post World War II. But then there was a moment where they, you know, were not particularly popular. But again, the tattoo had to go to a place where people didn't normally see it if you were in dress clothes. And then all of a sudden the tattoo sort of had a renaissance. In the 90s, into the 2000s, and the 2010s, and now on your face. And the visible tattoo, like sleeves and things like that. And it was, you know, people that wouldn't anticipate it to be. It was either, you know, sailors or prisoners were the people before that were getting them. And now you've got, you know...
Yeah, I don't think they really carry stigma anymore, unless, as you said, getting it on your face.
Well, now the question is that. Because now you have, I don't really care
because the people getting these tattoos on their faces, they're never going to be like, you know what? I'm switching from the Instagram world to the artist world. I'm going to go buy a suit and get a corporate job. So for them, who cares? If they want to do it, maybe get some a few likes on Instagram. That's what it's all about these days anyway.
Apparently.
Yes.
But why don't you do it with the henna if you're going to do it on the Instagram? Right? And I don't want to pick on Lauren because Lauren is, you know, Lauren is a brilliant, talented, beautiful young woman who has a pretty great career. And she has a tattoo that's not always visible to the, but it can be somewhat visible, but it's related to the business. But if you have a tattoo like that is visible, I think that's going to end, I think it pretty much ends your employment possibilities. But maybe it doesn't. Maybe I'm totally wrong about this.
Maybe it opens up possibilities.
Maybe now it's a whole new thing.
Yeah.
Maybe now your boss is going to have. When Warren Buffett gets a forehead tattoo, then let me know. I think that's going to change things.
But would he get an ice cream cone?
Right. See's candy box. Sherry, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Sherry.
Hi, guys. If my kids came up to me and said, can I get a face tattoo, I would say, oh, hell no. And after I said that, I would ask them if they enjoyed fries, would you like fries with that? Because that's what they're going to be doing for the rest of their lives.
Well, okay, first of all, let's not disparage the McDonald's jobs, because they are definitely the starter jobs.
I'm not disparaging them, but they're not going to be making six figures a year.
I don't know. See, that's the thing. Look at what's going on here. And I'm not even playing devil's advocate. But, you know, now these are rich kids. But some of these are artists who are doing it. And I'll bet you that there are some. And, I mean, like in this building. I mean, there are people under the age of 35 in this building that I'll bet you the majority of them have a tattoo somewhere. Right?
Okay.
So is a tattoo anywhere okay, or is it just the face tattoo that you're opposed to?
It's the face tattoo. I've already got a kid with a tattoo on his back. He can put a shirt on, nobody notices it. But, I mean, I'm sure that I sound like I'm going to go home and sit on my front lawn and kick the kids off. But, you know, the thing is that there are always going to be people like you and Nero out in the business world who's like, that kid has something on his forehead. Why would we want to do that? Why would we want to hire somebody who's going to be, like, having, like, strange words written on their forehead? Because, really, nobody ever has a flower on their forehead. They have, like, weird stuff. Like, the axe or whatever.
Yeah, there was a bloody chainsaw. The bloody chainsaw. That's you know, the bloody chainsaw basically does say, it says, I don't like you. When you meet somebody with a bloody chainsaw tattooed on their forehead, it's basically a sign of, like, stay away from me.
I'm a brooding human being who's going to take every third Wednesday off and alternate Mondays because I've been hungover.
Well, that you're describing me now. All right. Thank you, Sherry. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay,
Linda, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Linda.
Okay. Now go with me on this, all right?
All right. Here we go.
What are you doing?
Right now? Oh, yes.
Yeah, what are you doing?
What am I doing right now?
Yeah, all you there. What are you doing?
Well, we're working.
No. You're doing exactly what they want done. You're talking about it.
Oh.
These people crave attention. And that's why they do this. Because then everybody starts talking about it. But then you give them a year or two down the road, and they wish they had never done it. But it's too late. But you know what? When they get about 60 years old, and that tattoo is hanging or twisted in a wrinkle, it's not going to be pretty anymore.
Linda, I'm afraid I do have to ask this question because everybody's asking this right now in their own heads. Do you have a tattoo?
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
I'm not stupid.
Okay. All right, I got it.
I'm dumb, but I'm not stupid.
Thank you, Linda. Appreciate it. That's what we're doing right now. I will say this.
You know how many okay boomers we just got as people stared at their radios?
I want to know. Here's the ultimate thing. She's not wrong about the sagging tattoo. I have seen that. The sagging tattoo.
With plastic surgery these days.
Sometimes the tattoo does not hold up. And you have to get it, like, constantly re-upped, right? I mean, isn't that, like, part of the deal? that if it's because they fade after a while.
Yeah, or they get spotty, like white spots.
Right, or they can move, too, as your skin moves, depending on where you're getting it.
Right. Well, if you lose weight or gain weight, yeah, things can stretch.
Yeah, right. And all of a sudden, it turns into something. Right. I knew a woman who had, like, a snake tattoo.
Where was it?
It's where you would anticipate a snake tattoo to be.
And that doesn't help at all.
I could see it going a lot of places.
Sort of.
It's a versatile tattoo. You can wrap it around things.
It would be sort of where the appendix would be.
Oh.
That
did
area.
It cross over from the abdomen to the lower body?
Yeah, it kind of did, yeah.
Oh, that's, I like that.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Going to need to see a doctor after that one.
Yeah. Well, so the snake turned into a paint splatter. Is what happened.
That's a risky spot.
Yeah, it went. It went just. It didn't. It's no. It's like, don't mind. It had to be explained to me that it was a snake at one point, and then it is no longer.
If you got to explain the tattoo, yeah. It's never. A good
never
luck.
Mind this. Forget I it. Just want you to know that this was once a cobra,
and it was badass.
Yeah,
but things happen. Yeah. Gravity and whatnot.
Right. Three kids later, it is not a cobra anymore. Oh, all right. Kristen, I got about a minute left. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Kristen from Kansas Row.
I think this is a woman with the cobra. I said I had a minute left. Go ahead, make your point.
Okay. I have a daughter-in-law who has sleeves, tattoos. She's gorgeous, blonde, blue-eyed. Mm-hmm. She has some face. Beautiful face tattoos. She's been in some magazines, motorcycle magazines.
Yeah, that's it. Motorcycle magazines, right? Right.
She is making well over six figures, mm-hmm. and she's gorgeous. Gorgeous. Right. She's been on some tattoos.
There you go. All right, I got to go. As I said, there you go. You made your point right there. There. I like them listening from Kansas, too. All right. Justin, who also has a cobra tattoo, but we can't talk about where that is, comes your way right after. Radio Chicago.